Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 17, 2014, or it is 5th, 19, 2018. We will start our second service on this Sabbath day with the song entitled, Let Yahshua Come Into Your Heart. If you are tired of the load of your sin, let Yahshua come into your heart. If you desire a new life to begin, let Yahshua come into your heart. Just now your doubtings give hope. Just now reject Him no more. Just now throw open the door. Let Yahshua come into your heart. If 'tis for purity now that you sigh, let Yahshua come into your heart. Fountains for cleansing are flowing nearby, let Yahshua come into your heart. Just now your doubting give hope. Just now reject Him no more. Just now throw open the door. Let Yahshua come into your heart. If there's a tempest your voice cannot still, let Yahshua come into your heart. If there's a void this world never can fill, let Yahshua come into your heart. Just now your doubtings give hope. Just now reject Him no more. Just now throw open the door. Let Yahshua come into your heart. If you would join the glad songs of the blessed, let Yahshua come into your heart. If you would enter the mansions of rest, let Yahshua come into your heart. Just now your doubtings give hope. Just now reject Him no more. Just now throw open the door. Let Yahshua come into your heart. Part 4, Man on the White Horse, Brother Ben Roden. We're on page 31 of his track. The truth established by the type, symbols, and anti-type. We'll do just a little review from our last study. Okay, now it says, here is wisdom, antitypical of Saul. Okay, now, when it says antitypical Saul, prophecy has proved out at this point that Willis Johnson was the last one, the angel of the seventh candlestick, Laodicea, is the one that also had the antitypical part of King Saul's reign in the type. And so, when we say, here is wisdom, that's a very good comment there. Here is wisdom. Whoever knows the truth of who his antitypical Saul is, Ben Roden thought he had it figured out, and he did to the close he could figure in his day in 1965 when he was writing this tract. He's saying the antitypical Saul was a General Conference brethren. That antitypical Saul is one person, not several, number one. Is well aware of the fact, and so I'm going to put antitypical Saul, Brother Study Johnson, angel of the seventh candlestick, is well aware of the fact that his posterity will not be the governing body for this for the church, the Adventist church in the last days. In the studying of the Bible regarding their subject and making the application of the type and antitype in this manner, they are made aware of the antitypical David's love for them and his great zeal and desire for their salvation. Now, who's the antitypical David? Elijah David. And he was on the scene at the time as antitypical King Saul was on the scene. They were both running pretty much side by side for 33 years, 1970-2003. So they said they are aware. Who are aware? Gilead Center. Gilead Center and the members there are they are made very aware of the antitypical David's love for them. They knew and was aware for 32 years that I was the number one protecting the interests of the church on all fronts. Whenever Brother Johnson would come under attack by the Adventists, I was there to defend him and did defend him at camp meetings and everywhere else that this happened. And when people come into the church at Gilead Center and tried to start trouble and among the members and unseat Brother W. Johnson and throw him out, I was there to defend it, at least on two different times that this happened, and put a stop to it. I put it down. I put down the insurrection of trying to divide the camp and throw Brother Johnson out. I told him that Brother Johnson had a time period and that belonged to Yahweh. Yahweh set him up and Yahweh set him down. That wasn't for us to do. And so I defended that. So they, by me defending them, and then especially when Brother Johnson lost all the property, the church property, by putting it up as collateral for this derelict son of his that died and then caused the church, caused the business to go into bankruptcy, and Brother Johnson been responsible for his debt, they sued him for all the church's property, and I came to their aid with the knowledge that I had a knowledge of how to circumvent this thing and to stop this thing, and I did. And I saved, Yahweh, with giving me the knowledge of how to do it, saved the church from its loss. So they're well aware of the value of this antitypical David in their midst. So it says right here that they are made aware of the antitypical David's love for them, and his great zeal and desire for their salvation and progress of the work by the message, by the angel who joins the third angel. Okay, now who is this angel that joins the third angel? It's Yahshua. I can prove that to you in Revelation 14. Sister White says there's five angels' messages to be taught in Revelation 14, or you're left without a rule to interpret that chapter. That's found in Red Little Flock. Okay, and so when you go to Revelation 14, you read about the first three angels from Revelation chapter 14, 6 through 10, and then you read about the last two angels. And those last two angels' messages, it points to the Son of Man, Yahshua, sitting upon a cloud with a sickle, representing those two angels, those last two angels, the fourth and fifth angel. And said, this is the angel. Yahshua is the angel that comes and joins the third angel's message as it swelled into a loud cry. And he represents that fifth angel. Fourth angel, Yahshua represents that fourth angel as a sealing angel of the 144,000. I believe Ed Hollis said that sealing angel, Revelation 4, Revelation 7, is the same as that marking angel in Ezekiel 9, okay, which is Yahshua in both of them. And then that fifth angel that comes down and swells the third angel into a loud cry, that's Yahshua coming down in the form of that fifth angel's message. Okay. So it says, that's found in Revelation 14, 18, and Revelation 18, 1 to 4. And Testimonies Ministries, page 59, and Early Writings, page 277. Alright. It says, for the truth established by the type, symbols, and antitype for the whole system of the types and symbols was a compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation of which were bound up the promises of the redemption. Answer book, page 14. Thus, through the patriarchs and prophets, as well as through the types and symbols, Elohim spoke to the world concerning the coming of a deliverer from sin. Prophets and Kings, page 697. And that earlier I said answer book number 14 is actually Apostles number 14. Page 14. Let us continue. Thus, through types and symbols, he makes wise the simple and confounds the prudent by the showing that where there is no type, there is no truth. Shepherd Rod, page 10, verse 2. Again, we see there is a type for every event. And let none despise types, for where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd Rod, page 153. A close study of the type is the only possible way to clear the truth. Shepherd Rod, volume 2, page 266. For the ancient Babylon became a type, and had it not been so, there would have been no modern Babylon. The end of type, Revelation 18:2. Shepherd Rod, volume 2, page 268. See also Revelation 14:8. Now, if never before, we should see that where there is a type, there is also an antitype, and that where there is no type, there is no truth. 1 TG 7:15. When we consider the leadership of the Elohim's people, Israel, anciently, and make application unto the Yahweh's leadership of the modern-day Israel, SDA, we see that since the Philistines of old slew Jonathan, Saul's son, first, and Samuel, 1 Samuel 31:2-6, then we are made conscious of the fact that to be true to the type, the antitypical Christians must slay Jonathan, the seventh day, the DSDA, Executive Council, before they slay Saul, SDA, General Conference. Okay, now, what Ben Rhodes is saying here in 1965, that the Executive Council of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists has got to be slain. He's talking about the Shepherd Rod, where V.T. Hardiff died, and Florence Hardiff continued on. Even after she sold off all their property and married an Aiken and moved away, she continued on, carrying on her husband's work, wherever she went. And that's what Ben Rhodes is talking about. This here executive council of the Davidians have got to be slain. Okay, with the enmity, let's continue, exerted by the evil influences, it can well be seen that there is an attempt to persuade the antitypical David to use the advantage that Elohim gives him to slay Saul. So we're talking about now, this prophecy meeting is fulfillment today, with David now. With the antitypical David, Elijah David, to use the advantage that Elohim gives him to slay antitypical King Saul, Vertus W. Johnson. 1 Samuel 24:4. Okay. So I got enough information close to the end of Vertus Johnson's ministry to actually slay him spiritually and destroy his influence. I had received this information and sometime in 2002, but whenever I initiated Matthew 18 in 2001 in January against a member of the church, it took 18 months for us to accomplish this work of bringing antitypical King Saul and his church to a close. So antitypical David only use the advantage that Yahweh give me to bring Saul, antitypical King Saul, to a close. And that was the scriptures. Yahweh told me to execute the scriptures. He told me which ones to execute and at what time to do it. And then Yahshua and Yahweh the Father, they brought it to a close. They honored it. They honored it. I just put the scriptures in motion and bound them in heaven, and Yahshua and Yahweh made them come to pass at their appointed time. And that's what slew antitypical King Saul, was the word from the scriptures. However, like the David of old, the David of the day cuts off only the skirt of Saul, a robe, while the angel of Laodicea used his own righteousness with which to cover his feet. And so, antitypical David once again is Elijah David, and this angel of Laodicea is Brother Stubby Johnson. See 1 Samuel 24:4. Last part. In his Laodicean sleeping condition, see Revelation 3:13-19. Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, a type. It was thought by many in Israel that since Ish-bosheth was Saul's son, he should be the rightful heir to his father's throne. Read 2 Samuel 2. There were two brothers, Bana and Rechab, captains of bands who slew Ish-bosheth. Later, David had his young men slay them, 2 Samuel 4:12. But they took the head of Ish-bosheth and buried it. In this act, David of old showed his loyalty to the king of Israel and his respect for Saul by the avenging of the blood of his son. There is a nobility of character shown in the right actions. And the son of Jesse, although faulty, did show forth a dignity and certain qualities of the moral excellence in his regard for the king's office. Revival and Reformation. During World War I, the General Conference failed to take a stand for the conscientious objection, or non-combatant service and Sabbath privileges, with a diet free from unclean meats for the Seventh-day Adventist boys in Germany. They permitted and even encouraged the SDA young men to take up arms and fight. For proof that the spirit of the persecution was manifested by our former brethren, please notice the following documents which appeared in the Dresdener Neuesten and Nachrichten, April 12, 1918. Adventist ministers and fatherland. At the beginning of the war, our denomination divided into two parts. While 98% of our membership took the position on Bible grounds that it was their conscientious duty to defend the fatherland with weapons, and that also on the Sabbath. And this united position of the leaders was at once forwarded to the War Department. 2%, however, did not submit themselves to this united resolution, and therefore had to be disfellowshipped because of their unchristian conduct. These unprofitable elements set themselves up as preachers, and with the small results made propaganda for their foolish acts. They called themselves falsely preachers and Adventists. Verily they are not, for they are deceivers. When such elements shall receive their unmerited punishment, we regard it in the fact as a favor done toward us. For our leaders have, up to this day, invested our surplus church money and war loans in the fullest assurance that Germany, with the Elohim's help, would come through the struggle victorious. Now, isn't this amazing? The United States government, warmongers as they have always been, ever since they come into existence, back in 1790, and they've been warmongers even before 1790, when we formed our Constitution of the United States. And they create wars. They develop and create enemies. And then they manufacture weapons of war and either sell to their enemies or give it to them. And then they send trainers over to train them how to use them, the weaponry, and how to fight. We train all of our enemies. And then we make up some concocted story that they are threatening to attack us and so forth. We got to go over on their land and defend our homeland 6,000 miles across the waters from an enemy that is so much inferior to us. They wouldn't even be an enemy at all if we hadn't have invented them. And so here we are, the Adventists, stupid enough. They don't know the truth about our government and how it works. They never bothered to find out, so they, in the name of defending our homeland, they send our Adventist boys, the cream of the crop, the flower of their youth. They should be raising up and training for the ministry. Instead, they send them off as soldiers and condone them taking up weaponry and killing other Adventists that are fighting on Germany's side for the same cause and for the same reason, that it's okay to take up arms against your enemy, even if you are a Seventh-day Adventist and a conscientious objector. So, let us go on, continue reading. So it says, our leaders have, up to this day, invested our surplus church money and war loan in the fullest assurance that Germany, our invented enemy, with the Elohim's help, would come through the struggle victorious everywhere. Our members are sharing their self-evident duty in giving into the hands of the fatherland the so much needed means. For the Adventist men are practically all in the field or army service, faithfully performing their duty, and expect a just treatment as thanks from the fatherland also for the truth about the reform movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, Patriarchs and Prophets, page 10 and 11.
No, pages 10 and 11.
Or pages 10 and 11, I'm sorry. It says, please note, the above statement from the official German Seventh-day Adventist publication is quoted in the truth about the reform movement in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It says, 98% took the stand that it was their duty to defend the fatherland, Germany, with arms. For the refusal to take up arms and defend Germany, even on God's holy Sabbath day, was considered unchristian by all but 2% of the church membership. Because the 2% stood firm for principle, they were disfellowshipped. If those who stood firm for their faith were killed, it was regarded by the rebellious majority as a service unto them. For our leaders have invested church money, the tithes, etc., and war loans to arm Adventist young men in Germany to fight against our Adventist men here from the United States, disregarding even the Sabbath, and to kill Seventh-day Adventist boys from France, England, America, etc. What greater deception can come upon the human mind than for men to think they have an exalted position before Elohim, when in fact they incur his wrath, his divine wrath, by their wicked actions? I was shown that Elohim's people, who are his peculiar treasure, cannot engage in this perplexing war, for it is opposed unto every principle of their faith. In the army they cannot obey the truth and at the same time obey the requirements of their officers. There would be a continual violation of the conscience. Worldly men are governed by worldly principles. They can appreciate no other. Testimony, Volume 1, page 361. As a result of the wrong course taken by the representatives of the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists in Germany, the Reform Movement, Ishbosheth, an offspring of the Mother Church, was born. For the King Saul and his posterity ruled in Israel for only a season after David was anointed by the Samuel to become king of the Israel. For soon after David was anointed by the Elohim's prophet, the Philistines slew Jonathan and Saul, and two brothers rose in the one combined effort and slew Ishbosheth as he lay on a bed at noon, 2 Samuel 4:5. Captains of bands, and making the right application of type and antitype, remember, It must be done in a correct manner in order to teach a present truth lesson. Unmasking error, making wise the simple, and confounding the so-called wise, we must realize that there is a key revealed by the inspiration with which to unlock the mysteries of the heaven. Through the spirit of the prophecy by the Ellen G. White, inspiration reveals the key with which we are able to unlock the mystery of the identity of the true Israel of today. Elohim's remnant, which keep the commandments of Elohim and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. Revelation 12:17. Speaking of the ancient Israel, Sister White states, we are repeating the history of that people. 5T160. Since we are repeating the history of the Israel, it must be that our history compares with theirs. Thus, inspiration's key unlocks the mystery and identifies the true remnant of Israel. Therefore, as a result of the combined efforts of the two brothers and the type Bana and Rechab, captains of Ban, who slew Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, at noon, we now have two brothers in the Anatite, who in the one combined reform movement are zealously attempting to bring about a reform in the church. They figuratively slay the reform SDA church and typical Ishbosheth while he is resting at noonday, while the light is shining from heaven. Here we see one coming up and the other going down. However, antitypical David commands his young men helpers to slay the two brothers, a non-prophetic reform movement, with the sword of the inspiration present truth. If the truth cannot save, it destroys. At this late hour, the reform that has the living testimony of the spirit of prophecy consumes all non-inspired reform movements. So now, we're going to have to fast forward this to the 12th hour, and because again, it's mentioned here, antitypical David, and I represent the true antitypical David in the correct time, the 12th parabolic hour. So let's read this in the light of that now. However, antitypical David commands his young men, helpers, to slay the two brothers, Ben-Rodan, the head of the Ishmael branch, and Willis Johnson, the head of the Isaac branch movement. Two non-prophetic reform movements. Okay, with the sword of the inspiration, present truth. So when Yahshua come and took the reins out of the hands of the angel of the seventh candlestick at Kermit, Texas, 2002, and he turned them over to Elijah David, at that very time, that's when both of these non-prophetic reform movements were exposed, and that's when they were slain by the inspiration of truth. If the truth cannot save, it destroys. At this late hour, the reform that has the living testimony of the spirit of prophecy consumes all non-inspired reform movements. I have been shown that Yahweh is reviving the living point of testimony, which will develop character and purify the church. Testimonies, Volume 1, page 216. I was shown that the point of testimony must live in the church. This alone will answer to the message and to the latest sins. Testimony, Volume 3, page 260. Elohim designed that there shall ever be a living testimony in the church. Testimony, Volume 3, page 360. This unity cannot be accomplished without a clear, pointed living testimony in the church. And that is 3T, page 361. Many years ago, Ellen G. White wrote, I saw angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, descending onto the earth, and again ascending into heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. Then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to ascend to the earth, to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. Early Writings 377. There is seen the mighty angel message of Revelation 8:1, which is Yahshua the branch, Yeshua or righteousness, Jeremiah 23:5-6. Yeshua rebuked Satan and stands before Joshua, removing his iniquity and the sins of his people, Israel. For the Sister Christ says, then the angel, who is the Yeshua himself, as the Savior of sinners, puts to silence the accuser of his people, declaring, Yahshua rebuked thee, O Satan. Even the Yahshua that hath chosen Yerushalayim rebuked thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? 5T 469. When we realize that Joshua escaped from the captivity in the Babylon a few hundred years before the Yahshua, we are made aware of the fact that the preceding statement by the Yahshua's servant showed this symbolism in Zechariah 3 refers to the antitypical Joshua in our day, and which Ben Roden, when he was writing this here in 1965, understood that to be antitypical David. That's why he's able to, by inspiration, to go and point out these different characters that represents this one character in the last days, and that's antitypical David. So he knew that Joshua in Zechariah 3 represents antitypical David, which is the same thing as antitypical Elijah in our day. She speaks metaphorically of the Judah returning from the Babylon of the old in comparison with the Yahweh's remnant, 144,000, returning to their homeland from a spiritual Babylon today to stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1. Our Savior, who has chosen New Jerusalem, the capital city of his kingdom, rebuked Satan. For while the followers of Yahshua have sinned, they have not given themselves up to the control of the evil. They have put away their sins and have sought the Yahshua in humility and contrition, and the divine advocates plead in their behalf. For the assaults of Satan are strong. His delusions are terrible, but the Yahshua's eye is upon his people. Their affliction is great, for the flames of the furnace seem about to consume them. But Yahshua will bring them forth as gold tried in the fire. For their earthliness must be removed, that the image of Yahshua may be perfectly reflected. Okay, it says their earthliness must be removed. Unbelief must be overcome. Faith, hope, and patience are to be developed. Okay, and that's page 474. I suppose from this, this volume 3 of the testimony. Okay, but for the remnant are not only pardoned and accepted, but honored. A fair matter is set upon their heads. Well, a fair matter is not set upon their heads, but a fair matter is set upon the one, Joshua the son of Joseph, Zechariah 3, showing that he's crowned as a king. Speaking of the leader of the Elohim's remnant, Joshua, who has the living spirit of prophecy. Now this is Joshua, son of Joseph, Zechariah 3. Mrs. White states he would be honored as a judge or ruler over the temple and all his services. He should walk among attending angels even in this life, and should at last join the glorified throne around the throne of Elohim. 5T 469. Here we see that not only Joshua, the general conference or executive council present, has a crown during the loud cry, but all his helpers will have crowns also. Well, that's true. Those four men in Zechariah 6 represents Joshua's helpers that are crowned, and I suppose that they're a symbol of all of Joshua's helpers that will be crowned. 144,000 are going to be crowned. Consequently, since V.T. Hallett says that the branch, the Yahshua, brings revival and reformation. Okay. Well, we are instructed that And typically Elijah brings a revival and reformation. Okay. The great change. And he crowns Joshua as his under leader. Okay, now it's just Joshua, the son of Joseph, that brings revival and reformation. The antitypical Joshua, which is antitypical David. He's the one, the visible one, that brings the revival and reformation, because he's in the spirit and power of Elijah. He's the same thing as this Elijah that brings the revival and reformation. And the church that goes by the new name of Yahshua, the branch, grows up unto David, Jeremiah 33:15-16. The truth stands out that the brother Holof with the oil of the truth and the shepherd's rod is the antitypical Samuel, who anoints the antitypical David to be the king of Israel in the place of the antitypical King Saul. Okay, the general conference and his posterity. Well, in this case, Yahshua represents the antitypical Samuel. That's the reason he's called a prophet, priest, and king when he came to earth. Yahshua's got the three titles. He anoints, because he's the one that come and chose antitypical David to take the place of antitypical King Saul, 2002. He's the one that anointed his new servant then. Okay, for the truth is established by a true application of the types. Never forget that there is a type for every event, and let none despise types. For where there is no type, there is no truth. 2 Shepherd's Rod 153. Also, that where there is a type, there is also an antitype, and that where there is no type, there is no truth. 1 TGR 47:15. For the facts speak for themselves. Here inspiration reveals the truth, and the weight of the evidence proves it's correct. For example, Ellen G. White said that William Miller was a type of the John the Baptist, early writings 233. Yet the world and the church as a whole rejected William Miller and called his messages of the first and second angel of Revelation 4:6-8 false. Only a very few of the approximately 50,000 who followed Miller accepted E.G. White with the third angel's message of the Revelation 4:9-13. Only a small percent of the million and half or so of the SDAs have progressed with the truth of the kingdom message by the angel ascending from the east, Revelation 7:2, which incidentally is the fourth angel's message of Revelation 14:15. Now remember when I told you who this fourth angel was? This marking angel? I mean this sealing angel of the 144,000 found in Revelation 17? This is Yahshua. Revelation 14 proves this out. That fourth angel that's sitting up on the cloud and commanded to thrust in his sickle and reap the harvest of the earth, the 144,000, that was Yahshua, said the one like the Son of Man sitting upon that cloud. That was the fourth angel. The fifth one was commanded also to put his sickle to the fruit of the vine, and that was the fifth angel's message, which Yahshua represented that message as well. Was what brought by V.T. Hollis and the Shepherd's Rod, Micah 6:9, is not only proclaimed as the sealing of the 144,000, Revelation 7:1-8, but also announced the harvest angel. Okay? Who's the harvest angel? Yahshua is the harvest angel. Okay? So now we have earthly angels, and antitypical Elijah David also has that title as the harvest angel. Because Zechariah 12:8 says so. Said antitypically, David is raised up as the angel of the Yahweh before them, when he goes forth conquering and to conquer and the harvest of the world. The fifth angel, Revelation 14:16-18, the branch. Okay, we have the fifth angel's message. We have the Yahshua's branch, which is the new name, Yahshua's branch, with the seal. If Yahshua's new name, or with the Yahshua's new name, Revelation 3:12, early Ryan 15, likewise it was only a remnant of those who had followed on with the fourth angel's message that continued to follow the truth in the fifth. or harvest angel, the branch. Well, that branch is the name for Yahshua when he came. It never has the leadership accepted a reform message from the Yahweh, except in the case of Nineveh. However, the scriptures indicate the possibility of this precedent being broken. For the Miller was a false prophet. So if Miller was a false prophet, then E.G. White and B.T. Holliff and the branch messengers are likewise false prophets. Not only that, but John the Revelator would be false also, because on the Patmos he proclaimed that these messages would come. Therefore, since John proclaimed the five angels' messages of Revelation 14, which later were revealed successfully unto Elohim's church through his messengers, Miller, White, Holliff, and the branch messenger, and as the founders of the SGA denomination saw that there are five messages in this chapter with the little flocks, 10 and 11, and since inspiration has now linked these messages together, link after link, into an unbreakable chain of the prophecy, Education 178, they must be true. Now notice Ben Roden is saying that he said, since John proclaimed the five angels' message of Revelation 14, which later were revealed successfully to Elohim's church through his messengers, Miller, started with the first angel, White, with the three angels, and V.T. Holler for the three angels, and the branch messenger, and Ben Roden is calling himself the branch messenger. He don't put his name there, but that's who he's referring to. Has the fourth and fifth angel. So this branch messenger is Elijah David. The fifth group of laborers is called in Matthew 20, verse 6. And as the founders of the SGA denomination saw that there were five messages in this chapter, word of the little flock, and since inspiration has now linked these messages together, link after link, into an unbreakable chain of the prophecy, Education 178, they must be true. Satan works constantly and uses every force possible to keep Elohim's people from advancing with the truth. Consequently, it is difficult to teach a new message to the church or the world. Nevertheless, John declares the 144,000 from the church, Revelation 7:1-8, and a great multitude from all nations, Revelation 7:9, will receive the seal of these messages. The message of one, number one, the seal of Elohim, Great Controversy 4:52, number two, New Jerusalem, Revelation 3:12, and number three, Yahshua's new name, early writings 15, by the branch, having been catching on quite readily in the SDA church, which is the Israel of the day, and are picking up momentum, they will continue to grow. Actually, it's the spiritual Israel of the day. They will continue to grow in the church till the 144,000 seal, when they will go like wildfire to the world in the loud cry. We had the non-prophetic message in 1500 A.D., and onward by Luther, Knox, Wesley, Calvin, and Campbell, etc. Then the prophetic reform messages by Miller, White, and Shepherd, and the Shepherd's Rod, and now the branch. Okay. Followed in the succession. Now, in Rodenstein now, he's a prophetic reform movement. He has a branch as the last of the prophetic reform movements. He's claiming to be having the antipical Elijah's message. All right, let's see where this takes us. We know that the Yahshua branch, which is in the 12th hour, is the one that the prophecy is talking about. As a result of these movements and messages, we have the denominations of today, in fact, which conclusively shows that not all Israel is willing to progress with the light as the Elohim chooses to send it. Reform messages are vitally necessary for the church in her backslidden condition. When they are properly conducted and are free of the fanaticism, the Yeshua has always used prophets to guide and strain Israel back unto him. Never has the Israel as a whole given heed unto Elohim as he spoke unto them through his prophets. It is only a remnant that has ever progressed with the truth. Therefore, the tares in the church will be bundled, but the wheat, the remnant, Revelation 12:17, will be put in the barn. Kingdom, Matthew 13:30. Let us ever keep in mind that we are drawing a parallel between the leadership of ancient Israel and the modern Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist, and the principal reform movements within her rank. The Davidians believe that the V.T. Holliff had the prophetic voice. And if the leaders of the SDA Church do not think so, that fact alone does not make him false. For the history of Israel shows that he has never accepted the prophets of Elohim as has sent. Or she has never accepted the prophets of Elohim that the Elohim has sent. For the Jews did not accept Yahshua as the Messiah when he came. For the weight of the evidence from the Bible proves the shepherd's broad message to be true. Are you catching on, brothers and sisters? Do you understand? For the young people seem to be the ones who are able to grasp this message by the branch more quickly than the other older members of the church. Sister White said the young people would finish the work. They are able to count the five angels' messages in Revelation 14, as were the founders of the SDA Church, who stated, all classes of Second Advent believers agree that the angels brought to view in the 6th and 7th verses of this chapter, Revelation 14, represents the Advent message to the church and the world. If this is true, then all five of the angels brought to view in this chapter represents five distinct messages prior to the Advent, or we are left without a rule to interpret this chapter, A Word of the Little Flock, 10 and 11, published by the Review and Herald Publishing Association, Washington, D.C. So we have three movements in our day with the five angels' messages. William Miller had the first angel's message. Ellen G. White had the three angels' messages with the Adventists. And Elijah David has the fourth and fifth angel with the Yahshua's branch in the 12th hour. The first angel came in the 7th, 8th, and 9th hour. The first, second, and angel came in the 7th, 8th, and 9th hour with William Miller. The third angel came with Ellen G. White in the 10th hour. And the third angel had us run all the way through the 10th and the 11th hour for up to 2002. The fourth and fifth angel then belongs to antitypical Yahshua that opens it up to his visible servant in the 12th hour. Okay, older members have difficulty counting more than three angels in Revelation 14 and Davidians more than four. Since their disappointment, some Davidians can only count three, while there are yet other Davidians who cannot count at all, since they were blinded by their leaders in 1959. Are those who wish to learn about the fifth angel of Revelation 14, consider what Brother V.T. Hall has to say regarding why David attacked. Inevitably, because he is the only one who perfectly fits the antitype, the leadership in the time of the loud cry of the third angel's message. This being so, then it necessarily follows that Saul the first king who reigned over Israel and who was largely responsible for the early experiences of David's life, is a type of the church leadership in the period preceding the loud cry, the leadership which was raised up in 1844 and for the sole purpose of gathering the 144,000, the first fruits of the kingdom. In each case, type perfectly matches antitype. On account of his outwardly kingly appearance, Saul was chosen by the people, as the reader will remember, to be their king, in spite of Elihim's disapproval, 1 Samuel 8:7. Then finally, when Elihim rejected him and anointed David to be a king in his stead, he was determined to retain the throne by attempting to kill David, but ended up, even before the David ascended his throne, by the deliberately killing himself in 1 Samuel 31:4. Time has already demonstrated that the SDA organization is fulfilling the type, performing to incorporate and to elect officers by the people's vote. They have thereby manifested that they have cared not so much to please Elohim by being a peculiar people as he would have them to be, as they have to please himself by the being as much as possible like the other denominations, just as in the Saul's time the people want to be like the nations around about them, 1 Samuel 8:5-7. And although chosen by the people, yet the general conference officers were nevertheless accepted by the Elohim to be the rulers over his people now, as Saul was anciently, just as he betrayed his trust, however, by disobeying the word of Elohim as spoken unto him by the prophet Samuel. So the present church organization, the ancient men before the house, have, says the prophet, to the church today betrayed their trust, Testimonies 1 5, page 211. And that's track number 8, which is Mount Zion's 11th hour, page 47 to 49. For the Saul consulted with the familiar spirits, 1 Samuel 28:7-25, reporting on the full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship International 10th Annual Convention in Seattle, July 1962. The FGB magazine, Voice, September 1962, states, the Holy Spirit came down upon the people, spoke in the tongues, and many faiths assembled, Presbyterians, Methodists, Baptists, Seventh-day Adventists, all meeting at the feet of Yahshua, page 3 and 5. Dr. H.M.S. Richards was the featured speaker, page 6, on the opening day. He was the head of the Voice of Prophecy, you know, one of the main organs of the Adventist Church. For the September 1956 issue of the Eternity Magazine carried the following statement by the Dr. Donald Barnhouse concerning his meeting with the SDA leaders. And Dr. Barnhouse is nothing but a Jesuit minister that infiltrated the Adventist Church and caused to write the book Questions on Doctrine that they published in 1957, that refuted that Sister White is a false prophet and all of her doctrines and writings is false. Further, they do not believe, as some of their earlier teachers taught, that Yahshua's atoning work was not completed on the Calvary, but instead that he was still carrying on his second ministering work since 1844. This idea is also totally repudiated. Speaking to the SDA leadership, the servant of the Yahweh says, you have no right to manage unless you manage in Elohim's order. Are you under the control of the Elohim? Do you see your responsibility to him that these men should stand in a sacred place to be as a voice of Elohim unto the people, as we once believed the general conference to be? That is past. What we want now is a reorganization, a general conference building, 34th session. Ezekiel 37, you recall, prophetically proclaimed that David is to rule at a time when the two sticks, houses of Israel, are joined together in the land Elohim gave unto Jacob. This prophecy has not as yet been fulfilled since 10 tribe Israel was divided. Okay, from 2 tribes Judah. The 12 tribes have never returned since Ezekiel's time. Only a remnant of the Jews returned from Babylon and were in the land when the Messiah was anointed in 27 AD. At the end of the 69 weeks, 483 years, Daniel 7:25, or Daniel 9:25, from the time the decree was issued by the Artaxerxes for the Jews to return from the captivity in Babylon to Jerusalem and Palestine, Ezra 7:13. At that time, the kingdom of the Elohim was to have been set up, read Isaiah 5:7-7. Even though our forefathers rejected the Yahweh and thereby thwarted his plan to give them the kingdom in their day, that which Elohim proposed to do for the world through the chosen nation, he will finally accomplish through his church on earth today, prophets in Kings 7:13-14. Because Ezekiel and all the prophets wrote of the coming Messiah and his kingdom, the followers of the Yahshua expected him to set up their kingdom in their day. However, Sister White clearly tells us it will still come. Perfectly ponder her words. The disciples of Yahshua were looking for the immediate coming of the kingdom and his glory. But in the giving them this, the Yahshua's prayer, Yahshua taught that the kingdom was not then to be established. They were to pray for its coming as an event yet future. But this petition was also an assurance unto them, while they were not to behold the coming of the kingdom in their day, for the fact that Yahshua bade them pray for it is evidence that in Elohim's own time it will surely come. Mount of Blessing 159. For a remnant of the Jews have now returned from the lands of the spiritual Babylon in the fulfillment of the prophecy. Gather yourselves together, yea. Gather together, O nation not desired. Zephaniah 2:1. It says the Yeshua commands to Israel, spiritual Israel, the church, is behold the bridegroom cometh, go you out to meet him. Matthew 25:6. Elohim calls for his church, spiritual Israel, the 144,000, to go out of the lands of the spiritual Babylon and stand with the Lamb on Mount Zion. Then the end of our study, we're going to close now with a song entitled, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, fill my heart to sing Thy grace. Streams of mercy never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. Teach me ever to adore Thee, may I still Thy goodness prove, while the hope of endless glory fill my heart with joy and love. Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by Thy help I've come, and I hope by Thy good pleasure saves me to arrive at home. Fought me when a stranger, wandering from the foes of yore, here to rescue me from danger interpose His precious blood. Oh, to grace how great a debtor daily I'm constrained to be. Let Thy goodness like a fetter bind me closer still to Thee. Prone to wonder, Yah, feel it. Prone to leave the Yah love. Here's my heart, oh, take and seal it. Seal it for Thy courts above.